Welcome to Latte with a Lawyer, a podcast dedicated to bringing you the stories of some of America's most successful lawyers, figuring out what makes them tick, how they creatively solve problems, and how others aspiring to be them can follow in their footsteps.
Okay, welcome to another episode of Latte with a Lawyer. I'm your host, Jonathan Brickman. And this afternoon, well, it's the morning for you, I got Watson Bowen from Shackelford.
Hey, I'll answer to many things. Jonathan, great to be here. Yeah, Thanks for having me on this morning.
Oh, yeah. No, good to have you. So it's still the morning, Latte with a Lawyer. What's your morning beverage of choice to get started every day?
You know, and I've got it right here. So I've been doing the Nespresso, little make at home espressos for a few years now, and I love them. I mean, sure there's probably better coffee that maybe takes a little longer to get, but for somebody that has a little kid at home and the phone's always ringing, it's great to go upstairs, hit the button really fast and have something. You know, the Nespresso pods are very consistent and they're always usually pretty good.
Yeah, I think that sort of took the Keurig to the next level, right? Because it's much better quality, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It really is. And, you know, they have some flavors. You have to be careful. Some of the intensities of those, you can get up into their rank. I'm not really sure how they rank them, but the scale that hits anything over 13, I mean, you take a sip of that and your ears start twinkling and you start seeing colors.
Oh, man.
A little too strong.
Oh, that's pretty bad. I got to get one of those. I mean, more and more people I talk to, I hear that they have those. It's like, I still make it the old fashioned way, pot of coffee. And I drink that, but yeah. Keurig, I wasn't a fan of, but then espresso, I understand the quality is a lot better.
Right. No, it's very good.
Yeah. All right, cool. Good. Well, listen, aside from coffee, I'm sure you, you do other things like practice law. So tell us about your law practice.
I do that. I do that occasionally from time to time.
Yeah.
So I'm very fortunate. I get to practice really what one of my passions is and what I love to do. And so I'm an aviation attorney, and I help clients that are owners and operators of aircraft with regulatory and transactional issues involving their aircraft. As kind of a backdrop on that, I was a professional pilot and flight instructor for several years. I actually spent 14 years in the aviation industry before I decided to go to law school. And so I had kind of a full career before I became an attorney. And what's been great about that is, you know, all of the hours I put in, all the hard work and all the years I spent, you know, it was just building blocks to the next level. And it's what I still get to work on and what I still get to do. So I love to tell people, you know, I'm 8 inches wide and a mile deep, right? If you ask me questions about the law outside of the realm of aviation, I've got great friends that know. But, you know, the benefit of what I do is I really get to just dive down in and be in the weeds and really know the subject matter really well from not only a practicing standpoint from the law, but also from where the rubber meets the road, in a sense of how these planes work and what's involved and what the clients care about.
Oh, really interesting. So I got a lot of questions to ask you about that. Really interesting. First of all, just tell me what that means when you say an aviation attorney and you're helping.
Yeah. There's so many things in this industry. So I actually started out in litigation and I did personal injury, wrongful death, aircraft accidents and incidents. So involving airplanes and helicopters. Now at Shackelford, Bowen, McKinley, and Norton, I work with David Norton. He's our managing partner of the aviation section. And we do transactional and regulatory issues. So most of our clients, let's say they're either going to buy or sell a jet, or they have a fleet of aircraft and they need us to basically make everything FAA compliant, comply with, you know, IRS tax rules and Department of Transportation rules. And so we go in from kind of a ground up with some of these operators, you know, others that have been doing it for many years, we kind of fine tune things, but for the most part, we'll take somebody that's either about to acquire an aircraft or they're about to sell an aircraft, and we handle all the legal work to get them to where they need to be.
Okay. So it's transactional work, right?
It is. Yeah, it's a transactional practice.
Okay, okay.
You know, I was, after doing litigation for a while, my wife is also an attorney. We met at law school, and she has been practicing transactional work. since we graduated. And it was when I was doing litigation, it was funny. I'd come home at the end of the day and we worked the same number of hours, and she was always happier than me. And I said, "What's going on here? What's this about? How could, I mean, obviously she's probably a better person and a happier person than I am anyway, but day in and day out, I'm like, this can't be true. You're working just as many hours as me. Why are you so happy?" She's like, "Well, I put deals together. I
Right.
make things happen. And at the end of the day, I'm making people happy. I'm making deals happen." And I started thinking about that, and I'm like, maybe there's some credence to what she's saying. The frustrating thing about doing litigation is you can do everything right. You can have the facts right, you can have the law right, and you still don't win.
Right.
And as a pilot control freak, that was a little unnerving. And I love, doing a transaction. I love because, we, for the most part, we come in, we work with everybody, and I've had maybe one or two out of 10,000 that are just people that try not to make the deal or try and blow it up. But for the most part, we're there to, see this across the finish line and get it done. And so I've found, at least in my practice, of course, aviation in the industry in a whole is a very small industry. And so, word gets around. If you're not easy to deal with, it comes back to you very quickly.
Okay.
But it's been something that I've really enjoyed, because at the end of the day, you put in a long day's work and you see the benefit of it.
Yeah, nice. But how long did you do personal injury in litigation before you made the switch here?
So I had clerked actually with the same firm both summers in law school, and I worked for them for 2.5 years, starting in 19, and then through most of 2021, kind of really, really through the pandemic. And so that was really interesting, because I kind of came out of law school and things were the way they were for a
Yeah.
while, for about 8 months, and then all of a sudden the world turned on its head, and it was Zoom this and Zoom that, and so I got very proficient at being able to work remotely. I'm actually, you can probably tell, I'm in my home office today. But it was a very interesting change when all that happened. But yeah, I did that for 2.5 years. Had some really great experiences. I worked with one of really the top aviation personal injury law firms in the country, especially the state. Slack Davis Singer was an awesome experience. I love the guys that I worked with.
Yeah.
It was a great group. A lot of them were pilots as well, and so it was a lot of fun. I found at the end of the day that my personality is really suited more for transactions. And I love the airplanes. I love the aviation side of it. Could kind of take or leave the 5:30 on a Friday night. You got five motions to compel Friday, or for Monday morning. And like I said, kind of being a control freak, it was really hard to not be able to set your schedule.
Right.
And as a trial attorney, I mean, your schedule is subject to the mercy of whatever court you're practicing in. And when you do a nationwide practice like aviation, I mean, we had cases that were filed in Florida and in Ketchikan, Alaska. And so I'm working, 5 a.m. for the Florida cases and until 8:30, 9 o'clock at night for the Alaska cases. And after a while, I mean, it just wore me out.
Huh. Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah, interesting. So you said you were in the aviation industry before you became an attorney. What'd you do? What was your
So I was a
business?
pilot and flight instructor. I had the great fortune. I started teaching at a school where I actually learned to fly in Abilene, and got to fly with some great students. And I'll say, anybody that's curious about the aviation industry, anybody that wants to become a professional pilot, in this attorney's book, you're really nothing until you've become a flight instructor and you've learned it enough to be able to teach someone else.
Yeah.
And in many ways, the aviation industry is kind of backwards, right? You don't go to law school and your professors are 25-year-olds, 30-year-olds trying to make a name for themselves in the legal industry. It's usually folks that have done this for decades, that have the experience, that now go back to teach. Well, the aviation industry is not like that, because the great paying jobs, nobody wants to leave one of those to go back to teaching. And you really only get those once you have experience. And so the great thing about being a flight instructor at that time in my life, I was a 20-year-old, in my early 20s, was just all the old places we got to go. It was always on the road, and I love that. I was single and didn't have a family at the time, and I just was so fortunate just to go out and really have fun and get to help people hone their skills and practice their profession. So I did that for several years, and then I was very blessed. I got in with a family that owned several aircraft, including Learjet, and so I got to fly a Lear, and so I did that for a few
Wow.
years, and then decided that it's time for something new, and started looking into law school, and here we are now.
Yeah, but why the shift though? I mean, if that was your passion, you loved it. I mean, why become a lawyer?
That's a it's a great question, and I love to tell people this story. So I remember one day in particular, we were flying, and we're somewhere in, I think we were in Ruidoso, so New Mexico, and it would kind of rain there in the afternoons. It was pretty common to have afternoon thunderstorms, and I just loaded the plane for some passengers that were on, and it was raining, and then I remember one of the passengers had just kind of thrown the umbrella at me. And I remember thinking in that moment, I was, 22-year-old thinking, okay, this is my value to this person, right? And the family I flew for was great. It wasn't the family. It was just somebody that happened to be on the flight that day. And, I remember thinking to myself, man, I've got all these talents, I've got these abilities, but I don't really feel like I'm being valued in this current position. And it's a goofy thing. And sometimes I definitely kicked myself the first year of law school, training a cockpit view of 45,000 feet of the world for sitting in a law library.
Right.
That first year, I was like, did I make the right choice? Should I really be here right now? But one of the things I've been really blessed with is, as an attorney, is you're put in situations where you actually get to help somebody and make a difference in somebody's life. And as a pilot, I mean, really and truthfully, you're kind of there to move people and move things around, and it maybe it depends on your cargo. But at the end of the day, I mean, with technology advances, I mean, they can put a monkey in the cockpit and teach them to fly, probably teach them to fly fine, and so
Really?
I
Is
just,
that true?
yeah, it, you know, I'll say this, the hardest thing about being a pilot is making decisions. It's not about physically moving the airplane.
Right.
And so really, if you have the ability to do that, it's not, it can become monotonous.
Okay.
And I was kind of in that boat where I'd been doing it for, I think I had about 4,000 hours at this point, and as a 25-year-old, just I knew that there was something more I wanted to do with my life. I thought about going to the Marine Corps because I thought it would be so cool to fly F-18s off carriers, and I had some family that were pilots in the military, and I'd called, I'd gone through most of the steps to take all the military entrance exams, do the medical screening. And I was interviewing with several of my friends that were flying for the Marine Corps, and this was in 2014 era. And at the time, they were really curtailing a lot of the flights, a lot of the fuel expenditures, because obviously it's very expensive to put those
Yeah.
jets in the air. And so the pilots I talked to said, "Hey, we're flying 2 hours a month, and the rest of the time we're doing logistics and paperwork and PowerPoint presentations." And so, I was kind of at a crossroads. I thought, well, I'm either gonna stick with the military and completely sign my life away. And as we all know, the military is not a merit-based system. So you can get there and somebody says, well, hey, we need you to be somewhere else. And that can kind of be your story. And so, I knew all that kind of in my mind, and I thought, okay, well, I want to do something else. I want to do something more with my life. But I knew aviation was, it was really all I knew, and it was what I had a passion for. Actually, my dad was an attorney, and my sister, my brother-in-law, and my aunt are all attorneys. And so I knew, it was like, okay, well, that's a job people can have. You can go to law school. So I thought I'd give it a semester and see how I did. And if they didn't kick me out, maybe I'd keep going. And they didn't kick me out, and I did okay. And so here we are today. I mean, it's been a very fun and kind of a journey that's really coming a full circle. Because now I get to counsel people that were kind of in the same position as me and trying to figure out what they want to do with their lives. And I wouldn't say that I love it every day. There's definitely some days practicing law that can
Yeah,
also be monotonous
sure.
and be boring. But I'd say, I mean, 3 out of 5 days a week, I just wake up fired up and ready to go to work. And I think if you can say that about your job, I mean, you're doing it right.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So that's interesting. Okay, so I was going to ask a question, but you offered it up without me asking if anyone in your family were attorneys or, there was some influence here. It sounds like there was.
Yeah. So my dad practiced in Houston. One of the things too that has really kind of influenced the way that I practice now is when we lived in Abilene, he worked in Houston, And he would fly down there, you know, Sunday night, fly home Thursday night. And so he was gone most of the week growing up. And one of the benefits really that came out during the pandemic was the law practice went from you have to be in an office to, okay, maybe some of you have to be in an office, but others of you, if you can get your work done, you don't really need to be. And now that I've got a daughter, you know, one of my goals is to spend as much time as I can with her because I recognize, you know, I love what I do. I have a great passion for what I do. But, you know, when I'm dead and gone, somebody's going to learn this better than me. Someone will be a better attorney than I am, but nobody's going to replace me being her father, right? That's really the number one goal. And that's really my number one purpose now. And so I love that I get to still practice what I love to do, but it also gives me the ability to be, you know, be near my family and be close to them and not have to be on the road.
No, that's good stuff. I agree. COVID, as bad as it was, certainly a lot of good stuff came out of it, like that. For sure. So just tell me a little bit more about the kind of, I mean, I know your transactional journey for in the aviation. What does that mean? Like, what are the issues that you deal with?
Well, you know, so it's funny. I mean, day to day can be so different. I mean, I was just before we got on here, I was corresponding with somebody about a purchase agreement we're doing for a couple aircraft. And so I would say on large part, it is dealing with either the acquisition or the sale of aircraft. So that's, you know, from meeting with the client, talking about what they want, to talking with the opposing counsel, like, okay, what, you know, what are you guys looking to get out of this deal? You know, and we don't do a lot of the price negotiating. Typically, the parties will hire a broker to do that. But once they come up with the terms, we're the one that memorialize them into an agreement that everybody can live with. And then we make sure, you know, some of these aircraft will be, you know, if it's a newly manufactured Gulfstream, I mean, they're 50 million plus, right? And so if somebody wants to make sure that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed when all that happens, because at the end of the day, when you ink the deal, you've inked the deal. And you know, and you're committed to the terms. And so yeah, we do a lot of advising. And then once, you know, once either hopefully during the process of when they're acquiring the aircraft, we'll also talk to them about how they're going to operate the aircraft. As you can imagine, the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, has a very heavy hand on how they let people operate the aircraft, especially in terms of when you're using it to generate revenue. Because you know they're concerned with passenger safety, right? So they
Yeah,
don't want
sure.
anybody just going out there buying an airplane and then you know holding up a sign and that's like you know $200 tickets to Dallas from Austin, you know, and they haven't done any maintenance on the plane and the pilots don't even know what they're doing or how to get to Dallas, you know. And so that's something that we deal with, you know, quite a lot. We've got clients that have commercial operating certificates, and so we'll help them with that process and. Then we have clients that are, you know, just operating, you know, one or more aircraft, either on behalf of a company or for personal use. And so we'll just help them set up the paperwork for that. And, you know, the great thing about being at our firm at Shackelford is we've got, you know, there's more than 100 attorneys at our firm, but only four of us that practice in aviation. And so the benefit is we've got corporate attorneys, we've got, you know, estate planning attorneys, we've got other guys. And so, you know, we have somebody that comes to us and they're like, well, hey, we also have this other issue. And oh, well, we want to set up a company to do this. And it's great. We can do everything in-house. So it's great. We've got employment folks. And so, you know, if there's somebody that's going to hire a pilot, they can work out the contract for them. And so it's fun because in many ways we are kind of a turnkey service for our clients.
Neat. So what happens if there's an accident? Do you got a group internally that can handle that as well?
So, you know, we've got a partner that does, we've got a partner, Greg Riegel. He does a lot of FAA enforcement actions and does some litigation. But we've really stayed out of the accident litigation game. Like I said, the firm that I used to work for, Slack Davis Sanger, they're one of the kind of top firms in the state that work on that. And typically, if we have one of those inquiries, most of the time we'll refer it out to those teams. And I say that just because we have such a heavy workload right now that we know exactly what's involved if you get on one of those litigation dockets. And we frankly, we, you know, we're right at capacity with the kind of work that we're doing. And we like to keep it that way because we want to just focus in on what we know is our bread and butter and what we really love to do. That's not to say we don't do the litigation, but that there are other firms that really want to focus and just solely do that. And we have great relationships with those attorneys. And so we'll, you know, we usually refer those things out.
Got it. So what's the core of the business? If there's only you got 100 attorneys, four in aviation, what
Yeah,
does the
so
rest of the
the
firm do?
core is mostly civil litigation and other transactional work. So,
Civil litigation on the defense or plaintiff side?
yeah, both sides.
Both
Yeah,
sides.
both
Okay.
sides. Yeah, so a lot of business litigation. Yeah,
Okay,
not
okay.
very much personal injury or anything like that. It's mostly, yeah, mostly civil litigation, and then we do a lot of car dealership representation. As you can imagine, in the DFW area, there are quite a
Yeah.
few car dealers, and so we do a lot of that work. But the great thing about our firm is we've got offices in Dallas and Houston and Austin. We've got an office in Nashville, Tennessee. It's another big part of what we do is intellectual property.
Okay. Oh, that makes it like around music industry. Oh, interesting. Wait, so and you're in Austin, right? I know you're from
I
Abilene, but
am. Yeah.
you live in
Yeah.
Austin. So
Yep.
you can't work remotely from Abilene.
You know, I do. I mean, really, we work remotely everywhere we are because our clients always need us. And so
Sure.
we'll be on the road. I mean, we actually just got back from the ranch last weekend. And, you know, while we're out there, we've got, I'll say this, Elon Musk's his Starlink. Until that came along, I mean, getting internet in rural parts of the country has been such a pain. You know, it before I think the closest thing that was satellite based was HughesNet. And I mean, it was just like the old DSL dial-up, right? You'd watch something load, and it's just slowly coming across the screen. And so now, I mean, that we have that and have the ability to do it, I mean, it's really changed things. But I'll say this: having the entire time I've been practicing transactional work, I've never had a client say, "Hey, I want to meet you in your office. I want to meet
Right.
face to face." And if you think about that, you know, we're helping them buy a multi-million dollar asset. Well, they've got to make money if they want to pay for that multi-million dollar asset. They don't want to hang out with their attorney for hours and
Right.
see us. And you know, they're there for a phone call. We'll do Zoom calls. We work via email. And so, you know, the benefit of having a nationwide practice in that sense is you can kind of work from anywhere.
Yeah. Well, I would assume if they're buying a Gulfstream or some big jet, they've already made the money. They're not trying to make money anymore, right?
Well,
Unless
that's
they've
true. That's
leveraged it,
true.
like people that I live in South Florida. Unless they're, people have Ferraris and Lamborghinis. It's like, who knows what kind of debt they've got to pay for that.
Oh yeah.
So I'm assuming that. I mean, are those people leveraged up too?
You know,
Some
I,
of
for
them,
the most part,
yeah.
those folks are buying these aircraft and they're paying for it out of the operating revenue from their companies.
Of
And
yeah, there's a corporate one.
these are
Yeah.
corporate. Yeah. I mean, we do represent, you know, folks that are ultra net worth that, you know, probably couldn't run out of money. You know, maybe if I spend it, maybe they could,
Yeah.
but
That's funny.
you know, it's you know, so it's great. We do have a great a very vast client base. I mean, we represent, you know, pilots and you know, everyday workers and everyday folks to you know, your ultra net worth and big corporation, you know, Fortune 50 companies and everything in between.
Yeah. Anyway, interesting. I'll tell you a funny story as an aside. I was thinking about it. One of my brothers wanted to take flying lessons, and the pilot, he went up a couple times and he was good. And then it was a real windy day. And he was like hugging like the instructors, like take me down. So when you say it's like easy, you just have to make decisions. I mean, I'm not sure it's still that it's easy, right? You're getting turbulence and bad conditions. It's
Yeah.
like,
You know, I'll say this. I had a flight where if I had
yeah.
somebody's leg to hug, I would have been hugging their leg. I flew back from Florida. I was actually leaving Clearwater, St. Petersburg, Clearwater,
Okay.
and flying back to Abilene, and I was flying through Tropical Storm Isaac.
Oh boy.
And the day before had actually knocked out an attorney, and I want to say he was from Little Rock, and it was a tragedy. I mean, he was flying a single engine Pilatus back from the Bahamas, and the plane actually encountered turbulence at 25,000 feet, and it broke apart midair. And I'm telling you, that is very hard to do. The airplanes don't just because of turbulence, they don't separate. It's a combination of factors that go wrong. But that kind of speaks to how strong the storm system was
Yeah.
that I was flying through. And so to get back from St. Petersburg, Florida to Abilene, Texas, I actually flew over Knoxville, Tennessee. That's how far that storm system was. It took me 12 and a half hours. And at one point, as I'm flying somewhere around the Florida-Georgia border, I'm talking to controllers. And the controller's job when you're flying through weather is really not to guide you. It's, they're there to kind of advise you in traffic on, for other aircraft. And, if you need to deviate for weather, you kind of request that. And, and most of the time they'll give that to you. But if it's really busy airspace, you may not get the direction you want. You may need to turn around. That day in particular, I got every request for any deviation that I'd asked for. And I finally kind of talked to this controller and said, "Hey, I'm not really hearing other pilots talking on the radio, and you guys seem to be letting me go wherever I want." And he said, "Oh yeah, you're the only plane in the sky south of Tennessee.
Wow.
There's no military or commercial traffic in the air right now because of the storm." And as a 22-year-old or maybe 21-year-old, when I was taken off, I thought it was a great idea. But when I heard that and I was airborne, I thought, maybe I shouldn't be up here, and maybe I have no business being in this flight. And it was one of those. It was 2:30 in the afternoon. I'll never forget this. 2:30 in the afternoon in Florida, and I had to pull out a headlamp to be able to read the instruments. It was so dark inside the cockpit.
Wow.
Yeah, that was one of those flights that's like, okay, I've checked that box. I never have to do that
Oh man. Well, when you're
again.
21, I mean, again,
Oh
also you think
yeah,
you got the world by, you know what? I mean, you're not afraid of
yeah.
anything,
That's right.
right?
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
well, listen, good for you. You made it through that. I'm sure that
Yeah.
you don't want to do that
Yeah.
again.
Yeah.
Wow. So interesting. All right. So listen, just I'm curious to know what you think. What are the skills that you need to be good at what you're doing? What are the skills?
I'll say this, to be able to do a practice where you're not going to the office every day, whether it's traveling for work or being on the road to meet clients and do things, you have to be very disciplined, right? Because there's a lot of people that, for whatever reason, they need to be kind of held accountable by other folks around them. They need to be in an office where somebody's like, "Hey, are you getting your work done?" I'll say, discipline and drive to me are two some of the biggest the factors that make a successful attorney or not. Because you have to have discipline just to be at your desk, to be working at 8:30 or whatever it is. But then there's a lot of people that just show up and they're like, "Okay, I'm at the desk. I'm here, right? I'm just sitting at the desk." And it's like, well, where's the drive? What are you actually going to be doing, now that you're at the desk,
Right.
now that you're here? And humility. I mean, every day, for as much as I know about this industry, I learn things on a constant basis. And I'm human. I make mistakes all the time. I try not to make big ones and try to minimize them, especially when I'm dealing with very expensive aircraft. But it happens, and just, having a memory like a goldfish when it comes to the bad things and just letting it roll off your back, are just some of the biggest traits. Because there's people that, something will go wrong and they'll beat themselves up, or something goes right and then they don't remember to do that again, right? And so it's kind of a balance. You have to have a great memory when it comes to the important things, and then a really, really short memory when it comes to the bad things. But at the end of the day, I mean, if you're not somebody that has the discipline and drive to really push yourself when you're tired, and especially this last year now that I have a toddler, when you're sick
Right.
and you're constantly sick when you have a little kid, the world keeps turning, and people still need things from their attorney, and they still need you. And you're dragging yourself out of bed at 5 o'clock in the morning thinking, "Man, I could use another 5 hours of sleep." Too bad, let's get with it. The day's started and folks are waiting on you. So, but at the same time, I'm so lucky. I mean, I get to do what I love to do. So most days I'm fired up and I'm ready to go. I'm just, like I said, I'm very fortunate to get to do that. And so having a passion for what you do, I mean, you really can't put a high enough value on that, especially from the attorney standpoint, because there's so much of the background work that we do that is monotonous, and that if you're not really paying attention, you can make a lot of mistakes, especially in a transactional practice. And so having just that extra little passion for, okay, let's double check this, let's call this guy, let's confirm with somebody else. We really want, when the clients come to us and we do a finished product for them, we want it to be so perfect and so well done that, it can go before the world's eyes when they say, Oh yeah, this is great. You know, we hate putting legalese in our documents. We want everybody to be able to understand what this means and what this says. And you know, and going day in and day out of doing that, we've really found that, you know, people come to us and they keep coming to us because they, you know, we're easy to work with. That's what we try and be. But also we get the job done. And I've met some great attorneys that are so much smarter than I am, but they're impossible to work with. And they're so hard to have a conversation with. And then I've met other attorneys that are, they're really fun to hang out with. They're a great time. But then you keep emailing them, hey, where's this document? Hey, where's this document? So, you know, it takes a balance, right? It's a, you know, you really kind of have to, you really have to be working on firing on all cylinders.
So is this, I mean, do you see yourself doing this for the rest of your career, or could there be something else in the future at some point?
You know, I love the work that I do, and I hope I get to do it for as long as I can. That being said, I'm like I'd mentioned earlier, I think before we started the podcast, I'm a fifth generation cattle rancher. And so I've got a family ranch that I run. My wife also has a ranch. And I have two other businesses that I do on the side. And so I love, like again, I love what I do. I love getting to practice law, but I also love doing anything else at times, right? Just taking a step away from it, taking a break. And I found, especially with my personality, that that's really helped me, you know, just keep the drive going. I think if I only practice law, I would probably in 10 years would probably go crazy.
I got it.
But I don't. I have the ability to, you know, when I'm ready to do something else, I can kind of focus and shift on to another topic. And it's great because it kind of satisfies that, you know, part of my brain that just wants to be everywhere at once and doing many different things.
Excellent. What are the other two? So you got the cattle ranch. What's the other
So we had the
business?
cattle ranch, and then in 2018, me and a business partner bought a gym in Abilene, and it was a gym that we worked out at, and it's so much fun. It's called Firehouse Fitness in Abilene, Texas, and it's a 24-hour gym
I'm
that's
gonna
in
have
an
to
old
look that
fire
up.
station.
You got a
Yeah,
website?
it's a we do, yeah, and it's an awesome place. I'll say. We never really thought that it was, I mean, it was always a great community, but we never really thought that it would kind of take off the way that it did once we took over. We've actually had someone get engaged at our gym. They came and did the proposal at the gym. We've had like baby showers at the gym. We've had people have birthday parties at the gym, and it's such a community feel. I mean, you go in, people know your name, right? There's somebody, if you need somebody to work out with, there's somebody there that wants to talk to you, and it's just you know, if you need an electrician, if you need a plumber, if you're looking for an accountant, there's somebody there. There's a member at the gym that would be willing to work with you or willing to talk to you. And it's been really fun, you know. And we, as a part of that, we do work with a 501c3 called Footsteps for Life, that anybody that has cancer or is in remission from cancer can come and work out completely for no charge,
Oh,
absolutely
nice.
free.
Nice.
So my business partner is, it's in college, he was studying with some team at Baylor Medical Center in Dallas, and they found that folks that were currently undergoing chemotherapy, if they would work out, and I'm not talking, you know, clings and Olympic lifts, but you know, getting up, standing up, sitting down, standing up, sitting
Sure.
down, you know, picking up 2 pound weights and doing things, anything to keep your body active and keep the blood flowing, what they found is that chemo would process through the body better. And so you had a better experience and a better quality of life during that process. And so we kind of thought, well, that's a good idea. Maybe we should keep that going. And so that's been really fun to, you know, to give back in that community. I may have mentioned this earlier, but when I was 9, I lost my father to cancer. And so I have a very soft
Jeez,
spot
okay.
in my heart for that. And that, you know, just anybody that's going through that, I mean, cancer is just such a son of a bitch, right? And so everything it touches is, you know, it's just really hard. And anything that we can do to, you know, to give people relief during that time is something worth doing. So that's a really fun avenue that we get to do through that business, and a great way to give back. And the other business we have is a private security company. So that kind of got started. It's a very kind of out of left field thing to get into. I don't have any military training or background, but we had members at the gym that were former special forces guys that said, "Hey, we're really good at this. We're really good at doing what we do, but we're not great at running a business. And would you guys help us out kind of on the legal and the business side?" And so we have a company called Spartan Global Consulting that does executive protection. But one of the things that really got me into it is we do a lot of work with human trafficking victims. So we'll go on raids and we'll accompany law enforcement. And you know, because the government, as far as the government's concerned, you know, they're there to, in some ways, they're there to help the victims, but they're really there to catch and prosecute the offenders, right? That's really their role, which means a lot of times they go on a raid and they rescue all these people, they'll put them on a bus, and then that's it. And that's really kind of the only involvement that they have. So what we do is we go in a company, of course, we have, you know, we've got the door kickers. We've got guys that can go in with them and they're actually there taking out the threats or, you know, getting everybody to safety. But immediately once we've rescued them, we've got, you know, counselors that are in the van. They're taking these people. Immediately they're receiving treatment. They're receiving care, medical treatment, you know, mental treatment, whatever it is, whatever they need, and then taking them to a place where they can be safe. Because the really sad and unfortunate thing is the people that traffic these folks, they view them as a commodity, just like a drug dealer views a drug as a commodity. And we've had people that have gone on rescues, and then the biker gangs, you know, in the afternoon in broad daylight will chase them down the highway shooting at them. So that's been that was something that, you know, when I started, especially now that I have a kid and I'm a parent, and you know, I was talking with these guys and they wanted to start this company, I thought, you know, this is a really great way to give back. And in this last year, in 2023, we rescued six different kidnapping victims and reunited them with their families.
Wow, that's good stuff.
So it's awesome. Yeah, it gives me chills to, you know, to think about. I mean, yeah, I couldn't imagine having to go through that as a parent, but it just, you know, it's something amazing that we do to get to give back in a way that really matters and to make a difference in communities. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I live in South Florida now, and when you go to the airport, they always make announcements about human trafficking. There's a lot of that here. Yeah, it's a big
It's a lot, it's a lot closer and it's way more prevalent than really we want to acknowledge and think about.
It is
Yeah.
amazing because you're right. For the average person, it goes unnoticed. You don't even
Right.
think about it, but it's
Yeah.
happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Well, listen, good stuff. I mean, we could talk about that for another half hour, but I'll let you get back to taking care of these pilots. So just final words you want to leave about the firm, and the best way to connect with you if anyone wants to learn
Yeah,
more.
yeah. Yeah, again, you know, Shackelford, Bowen, McKinley, and Norton, we're headquartered in Dallas. We've got kind of offices all over the Southeast and Southwest. And you know, what we pride ourselves in is taking good care of our clients. You know, we're lawyers that give a damn. We have a no-jerk policy. So if you're a jerk, if you're an asshole, maybe go look for somewhere else. This isn't the place for you. So, you know, we want to be, you know, we want to be a turnkey service too. When folks come to us, we want to be able to handle pretty much everything that they need and take them from, you know, wherever they're at to wherever the finish line is. As far as finding me and communicating with me, I've got a profile on the website. You can just look up Watson Bowen at Shackelford. My email, my phone number on there. And I've got, let's see.
You don't have your hat on, though. I'm looking at your picture. There's no cowboy hat.
Yeah, you know, I was asking them if I could do that, and they thought, well, we're gonna have you do a hatless picture. But yeah, phone number for me is 512-542-5103. That's my direct line. And then you can reach me at wbowen@shackelford.law, and
Got
that's
it.
my email address.
Oh, good deal. Well, listen, it's been a lot of fun. I learned a lot, and you're an interesting guy. And
Thanks, Jonathan.
it was good to meet you. For everybody again,
Absolutely.
Watson Bowen. And your website says Shackelford, but you said the whole thing and your name's in there. Shackelford, Bowen, McKinley, and Norton. So you're a partner. So that's good
Well,
stuff.
I'm not. That's a little misleading.
It's a
So,
little
you know, I,
misleading.
it was a little joke that I told the managing partners when I was interviewing. I said, "Hey, guys, this is great. You don't even need to change the name on the wall." So,
Oh,
the
there's
Bowen
another
of the name
Bowen.
is actually Jay Bowen, our managing one of the managing partners of the Nashville office. But it, you know, it's a great coincidence that the name was
Well,
already on
you
the
can
wall.
grow into
So,
it. You're gonna grow into that. So yeah,
that's
you'll
right. That's
all right, all
right.
right. All right. Well, good stuff.
Well, thanks so
Anyway.
much, Jonathan, for having me on. This has been a pleasure. I hope that, for everybody that's listening right now or folks that tune in, I hope that this has been a, fun little entertainment and a little respite. But if anybody's curious about becoming a lawyer or anybody's curious about the aviation industry, I mean, this is absolutely my passion. I'd love to talk with anybody, whether they're looking to become a professional pilot or thinking about becoming an attorney or just have questions as to how all this works, with the FAA and everything. This is what I do. It's what I love to do, and I love to talk about
Good deal. As they say in Texas, good deal, right?
That's right.
That's right. And this is sponsored by MotionTrack, which is a legal tech platform. We help litigators, I know you're not a litigator, prepare for mediation and trials with our insights platform. Anyway, thanks again, Watson. Really
Thanks so
enjoyed
much,
it.
Jonathan.
You
Thanks.
bet.
Have a great day.
You bet.